There are two problems when it comes to faith-based movies. Number one, most Christian films look cheap because they don't have the budget. The second problem is when Hollywood attempts to make their own faith movie, which is when you get Noah talking to rock monsters.
Oh, dude. I actually got in kind of a crazy accident this week. I was mowing the yard and the blade shot out and it chopped off my foot. And my foot just was like gone for several days. And my girlfriend was just like, you need to curse God for this. And I said, like, nah, God gave me two beautiful feet. They belong to him. If he wants to take one, that's fine. And you know what? My faith in God was rewarded and he gave me my foot back and then some. So now I have 3 feet.
Just 2 feet grew back on one leg. Just have a fucked up, like, big stump foot.
Everyone's walking around the neighborhood. They do double takes, lower their sunglasses, their eyebrows shoot up. Everyone loves my 3 feet.
You have to buy 3 pairs of shoes or something. 2 pairs of shoes and put 2 shoes on 1 foot.
Yeah, well, what I do is I have one normal size foot and then one normal size shoe and then one really big shoe to fit both of them in there.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, I guess you could say it's kind of like the Book of Job. I'm like a Jobian. Jobian?
Yeah.
Jobish?
I think that's right.
I'm a Jobian figure.
It's Jobish.
Jobish.
That's from Arrested Development.
So yeah, I got 3 feet now. And I just couldn't help but think, like, this is just like a movie that I just
saw. This is just like a movie I just saw. Okay.
Hollywood has all of the production value, but none of the Christian value. How can we as believers enjoy a faith-based film that's as enjoyable as a blockbuster, but retains the power and truth of the Bible? We need a Hollywood-quality movie created by actual believers, and that movie is The Shift. It's about a man who meets the devil himself and gets banished to a dark, parallel earth where he fights to get back to the woman he loves. The script explores some of today's hardest questions about maintaining faith, like how can a loving God allow suffering? Or how can I overcome feelings of despair and hopelessness? Finally, you can see a faith-based film that feels like your favorite movies. The Shift is a sci-fi film that will make you think deeply like Inception and weep like Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar.
We are two non-religious people that are going to try and talk about the Book of Job, but only in the context of how it is loosely the inspiration for a movie called The Shift. And for some context, The Shift is a movie that came out in December of 2023. Alec and I saw the trailer for it when we went to go see Sound of Freedom. It is a Christian multiverse movie that was produced by, drumroll please, Angel Studios. And for some context, Angel Studios, when Alec and I were first talking about this podcast, we were like, we should just review all the Angel Studios movies.
Angel Studios.
And then we were like, yeah, they don't have that many yet. And then we were like, oh, let's talk about like right-wing media. Oh, let's talk about propaganda media. Angel Studios is the genesis of this project.
Basically, yeah. Like we've been interested in Angel Studios since Sound of Freedom came out. Right. When Sound of Freedom came out, and by the way, it made Angel Studios a lot of money. Right. Angel Studios so boxed office like $250 million. And behind it, there was a story about how it had been in production forever. That was kind of part of the sell for the film. Right. In like the QAnon angles was that nobody was willing to take this movie to market. And the company that ended up distributing it were these people that I had never heard of, Angel Studios. And when you go to see Sound of Freedom, which we did, they had a bunch of ad roll for other Angel Studios projects. And I was like, who are these fucking guys?
Angel Studios.
Come to find out they're Mormons, yada, yada, yada. We might go into that. I thought there was going to be a bit more there on the QAnon angle, which is kind of how I've been watching it.
There's a lot going on. It is primarily a Christian content production company.
Yeah.
And they try to capture, like we've talked about, they have Catholic films, they have evangelical films. Like you said, it started by 4 or 5 Mormon brothers who originally...
4 brothers of 9. It's fucking crazy.
But they had an original company called Vid Angel, I believe is the name of it.
The video streaming service allows customers to filter out some of their favorite movies, filter out profanity and violence and things like that.
Vid Angel was basically a streaming website. and kind of like a Christian competitor to Netflix almost in a way. And it would cut out basically sex scenes or like boob shots out of movies that you were watching. They had a scheme where they didn't have the distribution of like Netflix at the time, which if you remember, right, Netflix came up when you would get DVDs in the mail. But there was like an enormous network behind that of like having all these physical DVDs, getting them back and cleaning them and putting them in envelopes and sending them out. VidAngel tried to solve that problem, right, of like all of that overhead and like all of that sorting and like physical sorting, which basically doesn't exist anymore, right, because Netflix is all digital now. I think they don't do DVDs at all anymore.
It's completely digital.
So they tried to get around this with a kind of a clever legal structure. Or for the time, which was they owned a bunch of physical DVDs, right, at their central location in Provo or in Utah or maybe in, you know, New York, who knows. For a small payment, you would buy the DVD from them and then you would own the DVD. And because you own the physical copy of the DVD that's still in Utah, you have the right to stream it wherever, right? It's your DVD. You can watch it through whatever means you can, theoretically. So you're watching your DVD, and then what do you do now with this, you know, retail price DVD that you bought from them? You can sell it back to them. So if the price of buying the DVD was $24 and you sell it back to them for $23, then you have bought and then sold, basically rented, the DVD for a dollar.
VidAngel essentially sells its customers movies, then allows them to set their filters, removing things like violence and profanity. Within 24 hours, they sell it back.
For $19 in credit, so your net cost for watching a filtered movie is a dollar.
This did not hold up under legal scrutiny later on, but it was like a clever invention, right? It was like trying to skirt In the Wild West days of streaming, right? Before all this stuff basically gets hammered out by companies that have enormous amounts of money and either own the licenses to these products already or are just big dick players in like the space, right? Netflix. It was an attempt at streaming that was kind of interesting.
A federal judge has granted a preliminary injunction against VidAngel.
And then they got sued by Disney and Paramount and like a couple other film manufacturers for violating anti-piracy controls basically on like the media themselves, which is weird. You're not allowed to do, even if you own the shit, you're not allowed to crack DRMs, right?
Right.
You buy a physical product, and unfortunately, what you're allowed to do with a physical product you own or license is actually up to the company that sells it to you. Kind of weird, but that's the world we've decided to build. and they settled out of court for like a small amount, but VidAngel still exists. And they no longer partner with all the people that sued them, but they do streaming services basically with like this clip technology for a number of streaming services. And apparently they still make money.
Interesting.
By the way, Angel Studios only exists because of that lawsuit.
You may think the CEO wouldn't be celebrating the day after finding out the big studios scored a small victory, but he is. In fact, they're expanding. And all this, not just a Christmas party, but the setting for a major announcement.
We are launching VidAngel Studios.
They're going to begin producing their own original content as well.
This month, actually, we're launching 3 films.
All the people in this room are cheering for VidAngel to win their appeal. And they're not alone. Supporters from all over the country have donated close to $10 million to help the legal fight.
Because one of the other things they pioneered was the 2012 Jobs Act loosened up restraints on private companies issuing basically unlicensed securities, right? To make crowdfunding and like venture capital, quote unquote, accessible to people, right? Basically to reduce regulation on venture capital funding and crowdsourcing, we'll call it crowdfunding. In 2012, Congress and the Obama administration allowed passed the Jobs Act, which is actually not what it sounds like. It sounds like they would be, you know, employing people in the federal government. Absolutely fucking not. This is all about venture capital and crowdfunding. And part of that was basically companies can issue security certificates. Basically, you can buy a piece of paper that says that you gave a company money and that you're entitled to some return given that the product is successful, instead of like writing out a loan and having like all the constraints they're in, or the company having to go through the fucking trouble of making a stock or a security, becoming publicly traded, right? You can just buy a certificate publicly on the internet. You can do it right now with Angel.
We need your help to turn The Shift into a full-length feature film. But rather than pass around a donation plate, we want you to own part of the movie. Click the link to invest in The Shift today.
And when they got the shit suit out of them by Disney and Paramount and stuff, they basically pioneered this thing, which is actually in use by a tremendous amount of like indie media companies now, including by The Chosen, which we'll get to later, which was... buy a chunk of our company that's getting the shit suit out of it because we're good Christians and we want to make Christian content. And if we stay alive and we make money, you will be entitled to a return.
Yeah.
And they raised a bunch of money apparently, and kept themselves out of a bankruptcy court, out of the kind of bankruptcy court that would have caused Angel to be nothing, right? They did file for bankruptcy and they restructured, and VidAngel got split off from Angel Studios, and Angel Studios goes to market with money and seeking more venture capital fund to create Christian content.
Yes. Now, it should be noted that Angel Studios has only recently gotten into the actual content creation game.
Yes.
They're mainly a distributor.
It took them a while.
Yes. But the big thing that actually put Angel Studio, like Sound of Freedom, made it into the theatrical map. But the thing that made it a force to be reckoned with in terms of television production is, like you said earlier, The Chosen.
The plan is for The Shift to be distributed by Angel Studios, which helped The Chosen become the largest crowdfunded media project of all time. Angel Studios' distribution of The Chosen then went on to generate over $70 million in revenue and over 250 million views.
Which is a show about the life and times of Jesus Christ. Season one starts off in the first century, and they're about to start their fourth season. Who knows how long it will go on?
I think they're planning for 7 or 8 seasons. I can't remember. They haven't gotten to the trial and tribulations of Dr. Christ yet. he's I think in the fourth season he's just now getting arrested.
Dr. Christ, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Cross.
Yeah, there you go. I think he just got arrested. So season 5, the next season is going to be The Passion. There's going to be whips involved, and he's going to be doing a lot of walking, and a lot of unfortunate stuff's going to happen to him. And then in season 6, he's going up. He's going up on the cross.
So there is some controversy going on around The Chosen right now. And this is, and I could speak a little bit about this having worked for a post-production company. The Chosen is not created by Angel Studios. Angel Studios distributes it. But, and fun fact, it was created by Dallas Jenkins?
Dallas Jenkins, and son of James Jenkins?
Yeah, the creator of the Left Behind series.
Yes, Jerry Jenkins.
So he's following in the family business.
Some people, I swear to God, that listen to this podcast have no idea what the Jerry Jenkins
Left Behind.
Yeah.
So for those who don't know, Left Behind is a series. I think there's like over 20 of these fucking books that is like an eschatological series, which is the rapture has come. What do we do now? It's a post-apocalyptic series of God came and took all the good ones. You're stuck here. And there's a charismatic presidential figure, Antichrist.
I did not know that you knew this much about the Left Behind series. I mean, like for like a bit of cultural context, I was surprised that like the Chosen creator and director and like maybe writer, I think, is the son of this guy. Because if you grew up, I don't know if anywhere in the United States, but like especially in the South.
Yeah, Bible Belt.
This Left Behind shit, when I was in like junior high and high school, this Left Behind shit was fucking everywhere.
It was everywhere.
These Christian sci-fi rapture books, and people were like, "You like Tolkien? You like you like Tolkien? You like sci-fi books? You know what you should really check out is Left Behind." And I'm like, "Why have I never heard of? Oh, it's a fucking Christian rapture thing. I'm good." Right? It was everywhere.
Yeah. If you want really good rapture content, watch The Leftovers on HBO. It's absolutely phenomenal television.
Is this one comedy?
It's got funny parts, but it's mostly like a drama mystery of just like, what is it? Like 2% of the world population disappeared overnight and nobody knows what happened. It's very
nobody
funny.
Nobody notices.
Yeah. What's very funny is that at one point in the series, and this is just like life imitating art, is they're like, do you think maybe it was Mossad? Do you think they had some kind of space lasers? And it's like, it's so funny how Marjorie Taylor Greene ends up echoing that dumb fucking bullshit. And I think the Antichrist in the Left Behind series is like a Romanian who becomes an American. I think he's from Romania. Oh, I'm not a
weird immigrant guy.
Yeah. I always wanted to make it big. So anyway, the Chosen lawsuit that's happening right now.
If you haven't heard of The Chosen, you're in good company. I think I'd heard of it maybe once just like on the internet. The Chosen is like incredibly popular. I mean, it's like one of the most successful TV shows. I mean, it doesn't really, does it air on anything? It might air on like BYU TV, like the Mormon channel.
Yeah, it may air, but it's mostly
filmed. Does anything air on fucking TV anymore? I don't know. I don't watch TV.
I don't know.
It's got a lot of viewers. This is like this show about the life of Jesus Christ. I think it first airs in 2017, but I think it explodes basically during like the COVID era. People start finding out about it. It's making a fuckload of money. It's very, very watched. It's free to watch, but it's like monetized through that same, by the way, that investment system, or like a similar system that Angel also invented, this like pay it forward thing.
Yeah.
It's making a fuckload of money. And so the news has been that Angel Studios, which is kind of partnered with The Chosen, the show, right, to do distribution, is breaking apart from it.
So right now, you can watch The Chosen on quite a few different platforms. I believe you can watch it on Netflix. You can watch it on Peacock. You can watch it on Angel Studios' own app, which is super expensive and doesn't offer a free trial. Or you can even watch it in 3-episode chunks as they release it in the theaters.
At the movie theaters. Yeah. I think it already came out, I'm pretty
sure.
Did.
Yeah, it did. You can watch The Chosen on all these different platforms, which is pissing Angel Studios off.
Yeah.
And the way that when a TV show is made or a movie is made, a bunch of lawyers get together and they kind of hammer out who gets the various rights. And so you have your streaming rights, you have your television broadcast rights, you have your distribution rights, merchandising rights, and these are all up for grabs. It's not a guarantee that they all go to one company. And an example of this is there's a show called Vinland Saga. And Vinland Saga...
This is an anime, isn't it?
All my examples are anime because I worked at an anime production company. And I'm going to be careful not to violate the very shoddily written NDA I signed.
There you go.
But if you're a big fan of Vinland Saga, you will notice that there is a dub on High Dive, which is the anime streaming service that's owned by the AMC Media Network. And there's also a version of it on Netflix. And the reason for this, actually, I believe the Vinland Saga at High Dive is not on their website. I think it's only in the Blu-ray because they had the distribution rights, whereas Netflix had the streaming rights. I don't know who had the broadcast rights for Vinland Saga. Maybe Crunchyroll? I'm not entirely sure.
So broadcast is like, is that like movie theaters or is that just like live TV?
That's live TV. I don't know what movie theater falls under. Maybe theatrical distribution rights. So
I'm a dumbass and I did not know this. So selling a DVD, playing it in theaters, playing it on TV, streaming it online, all of these are different rights that can be attributed, can be given to different companies, right? Different distribution.
Purchased by different companies. Yes.
Purchased. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. And there's one, Pop Time Epic is an anime that the creator was just like, anyone can stream it. I don't give a fuck. And so that's why it's the one anime that's on like everything. It's on Netflix. It's on Hulu. It's on High Dive. It's on Crunchyroll. Everyone can stream Pop Time Epic. I think that's what it's called. Rahul's going to eviscerate me if I get the name wrong, but I don't really give a fuck.
So wait, if The Chosen's on a bunch of different streaming networks, I assume it's made like agreements with Amazon and Hulu and whoever, it's made separate agreements with all those people allowing them They must not have an exclusive streaming agreement with anybody, right?
That's what the lawsuit is about. Angel Studios is suing the creators of The Chosen because they're trying to keep it amicable and just like settle it according to contractual obligations. They don't really want to drag it out into court. But yeah, The Chosen is just like, no, we want this to be everywhere. And Angel Studios, seeing dollar signs in their eyes, like, no, we want to be the only website that you can watch this.
Yeah, it's a little bit unclear because, like, I think their statements actually conflict a little bit. Basically, The Chosen is a fucking moneymaker. This show is going to keep making money. And they're tied in this old agreement to these guys that they knew back in 2017, right, that helped them, by the way, come up with that that same funding scheme that I was talking about earlier. There's a similar one with, like, The Chosen is offered for free, right? You can watch it for free. And the way that one of the ways it's monetized is you can give them money basically like a tax-free donation to charity, or I don't think they do the investment thing that Angel does. But they have a scheme, and you'll see this in Sound of Freedom and some of the other like Angel Studios products, which is like pay it forward. You can give them money basically to continue the show, right? In the case of Angel, they also used it to theoretically buy tickets to give people free tickets to go see The Shift and Sound of Freedom in theaters.
I was going to say that was a weird element of seeing Sound of Freedom was at the end. They do show a QR code that you can scan and buy other people tickets.
The Shift had one too.
Yeah.
Outside of selling the rights to your Amazons and your Hulus so that they can host it on their streaming services, The Chosen makes apparently a lot of money from these donation schemes. A lot. People are very, very happy with this product. They think it's bringing the story of Jesus to hundreds of millions of people, and they're willing to pay for it. And they're tethered by this old agreement to Angel Studios, who really, I can't really tell what Angel Studios does for them.
I think at this point, they don't do anything for them.
Because The Chosen has their own. They have their own like streaming app now.
One thing I'll say, I don't want to make a huge assumption that all Mormons know each other, but The Chosen was originally filmed in Texas, and I believe season 2... the Church of Latter-day Saints, like, we have a set that is like a film set that is like Jerusalem
where they make all of their movies. Yeah.
Yeah. And so they're like, all right. So they filmed a show in Utah. Maybe Angel Studios set them up with that kind of connection. I'm not entirely sure.
I would assume so.
What I'm curious about, and this may break the relationship.
By the way, a couple people from Angel have also left to join The Chosen. Like production marketing people have left Angel Studios to join The Chosen.
Actually, that's pretty common. So that might not be scandalous.
No, they're leaving a mid business to go work for like the big dogs.
No kidding. What I'm curious about is when it all comes down to it, will the creators of The Chosen and the people running Angel Studios split over? Is the Holy Trinity three different people? For those who don't know, Mormons are polytheists who believe that the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit are three different entities instead of all one entity, like a good old Protestant.
Yeah.
Are you a papist coming to the defense of polytheists? What a surprise.
If I'm in a church, it's a Catholic church, right? So I do have some innate bias, even though I cannot call myself a Catholic. I'm not a Catholic. I'm just trying to look up if Dallas Jenkins has... I don't think he's Mormon.
I don't think he is either. I think he's just...
Harvest Bible Chapel. I think he's like... He's basically non-denominational evangelical.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a Protestant.
Sure. Oh, of course he's part of like a mega church.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah. They probably screen the episodes in a mega church.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Yeah.
That's a small way to make money, but it's a great way to make money. So anyway, I mean, basically I wanted to know when we went to see Sound of Freedom, I kind of just wanted to know who Angel Studios were, right? Like, who is this company that's willing to air this? And my guess was, as it is with many things, that like anybody like this, anybody willing to like make a bunch of money and go out on a limb to make this like distribute, do the marketing, baiting QAnon people to go see this movie and then very successfully making a shitload of money off of it. Yet there's going to be some weird stuff that's worth talking about there. And there kind of is because of all this recent shit that went down with Angel Studios and The Chosen. And a lot of it kind of illustrates what kind of company Angel is through its relationship to this, like, the biggest thing in Christian media since the fucking Passion of the Christ, right? Which is the show, yeah. The Chosen.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I'm very curious how the dust is going to settle on this. I mean, to your point, it shows Angel Studios is showing his ass on this. Like, this is the first time that the money has tested their commitment to, like, we need to get the message of God out to everyone, but only through our streaming service, which is so expensive. Dude, okay, so I follow Angel Studios on fucking everything, and they got this thing called The Wing Feather Saga, which is like an animated series for kids. Anyway, they're selling season one on Blu-ray, and it's a two-disc set. If you buy it, you get 6 months free of Angel Studios subscription service. I think it's called like The Guild or something. I think that's the proper name for the subscription service. Anyway, it cost $70. And they're like, it's $110 value when you consider it. And I'm like, no, there is no, it's a two-disc Blu-ray set for $70.
It's wild that Angel makes any money. There's like 20 titles on their subscription service.
Yeah.
It's crazy. I mean, imagine if you went on Netflix and there were like 20 things to watch. like three of which are like children's content, a bunch of which is, by the way, like one of the things Angel hasn't actually produced anything until like a couple years ago. So what they were a distribution company for a long time for were like dry bar comedy, which is like clean, basically like corporate comics.
Yeah.
Right. The same kind of people that,
yeah.
If like Chevron has like a company event, right. And they hire like a comic to come tell like clean jokes. Right. Those guys are on dry bar comedy, which is a series of specials and it just sounds like the worst shit imaginable.
Very, very cringe.
And for a long time, it was that and The Chosen. That's all they fucking had until a couple years ago. They finally came to production. They finally came to release on like a couple of their like very mid movies, and then until Sound of Freedom, boom, everything blows up.
Yeah, that's Angel Studios for you. And my guess is it's going to go the way of a lot of these streaming services. I don't know. The streaming wars are ongoing, and you, listener, maybe you've noticed this, that a lot of streaming services end up getting bought by bigger companies, and now they're like being bundled with other streaming services and like a new cable where you don't have to pay residuals. But I do believe Angel Studios will get roped up into something. These Mormons are going to cash out when the time's right, or maybe they're going to miss the boat and cash out a day too late. Who knows? But they're going to cash out. Okay. Should we now talk about the movie, or do we have more to say about Angel Studios?
Yeah, I was like, this is so much more interesting than The Shift. So one of the things I was going to suggest is like, we do a short synopsis of The Shift. We talk about it a little bit, and then we'll have a clip that, again, I'll like put at the beginning. That's like, we wanted to make this episode to talk about The Shift. We're not going to talk that much about The Shift. The Shift sucks. Right?
Like, The Shift does suck.
We're going to talk about Angel Studios and like who these people are.
The Shift not only has the incredible potential in the marketplace, it's just an incredible movie.
Nice to finally meet you, Kevin. I'm the benefactor.
Where's the accident? What happened?
There was no accident here.
Where did everybody go?
They didn't go anywhere. You did. There are countless other realities. Imagine everything you have ever wanted. 1,000 versions of you in 1,000 different worlds, all working for me.
Where's my wife? I shifted her.
All right, we can probably knock out The Shift real quick. So The Shift,
like you said, came out last year,
and it's a feature length version of a short film that came out in 2017. And the short film, the script of the short film, is pretty much word for word included in the longer version of the movie. So make sure you watch the longer version of the movie. Shout out to the streaming service I got this movie from, or the pirate site I got this movie from. Fuck them. I'm not gonna pay.
I'm not signing up for Angel Studios.
Yeah, no free trial. I'm not fucking doing that. This movie is, like we said, it's like the Book of Job, but a multiverse kind of thing. So it opens up. It's one of those movies that opens up in the middle of the movie, the middle of the action. and they're the guy with a weird little watch, and he's the narrator talking about how he's like, this isn't my world. I've never been to this lake. I got to find my wife. And we're like, okay, whatever. If you watch the trailer, you are not left in the dark with how this movie opens.
Yeah.
Like a lot of
you basically see almost, I think, the whole movie right in the trailer. It's one of those.
Yeah. That's one thing about these kinds of movies, that their trailers want to let you know how it ends. So anyway, it opens up the guy in 2008, and the main character, Kevin, works at Bear Stearns, and he just lost his job in the financial crisis of 2007, 2008.
I love this choice, by the way. When you start out, they have picked, inexplicably, they have picked like one of the most detestable backgrounds for this fucking guy that I can imagine, which is hedge fund manager at Bear Stearns. Unfucking real.
Yeah. So he's at a hotel bar and he's spinning his Alcoholics Anonymous chip. And he's debating like giving up his sobriety because he just lost everything. And all of a sudden, this like absolute smoke show sits next to him. It's like, well, isn't this just the saddest piece of fucking shit I've ever seen?
Yeah, she negs him, dude.
Yeah, she negs him hard. She negs him. He plays along. They strike up a conversation. They flirt. They leave. She's with her friends. She's like, my friends all dared me to come talk to you. And it cuts to three of her friends that are like drunk as shit. It's like,
laughing. She's a sober. She's revealed to be a sober lady hanging out with these absolute sloshed.
That's so funny.
Bunch of sloshed blondes. Just a bunch of girls pushing her and just being like, go fuck that dude.
Yeah, basically. So he's just like, do you want to go get a drink for tea? And then they go and get some tea.
They do the life montage that like basically every single guy who's like really lonely, like has, this is like too revealing about myself. Like, I think every single guy that's like lonely, like has this thought of like, what if I struck up a conversation at a bar with someone real? And we like really got into it. So like they do that. They have this montage where like, they like play out the story of their life, and you see a bunch of scenes of their future, right? Like they're going to talk about getting married and like getting serious, blah, blah, blah. And that's what ends up happening in their future, right?
Yep. They have a kid, they have a life together. Fast forward, I don't know how many years, 5 or so years. It doesn't fucking matter. Anyway, this is where the short film begins. This is how the short film opens up. So the guy, Kevin, is just like checked out, looking at his iPad while he eats. His wife is in the back. They're not talking to each other. He goes to work. His boss is like, dude, you missed donuts at my totally cool meeting.
Yeah, this is a smash cut to the future, right? Yeah. Like, he's married. They have a kid because you see a picture of it in like a frame. And then he's at his shitty job, right? He got fired out of Bear Stearns, and now he works at some accountant gig.
Yeah, and he's like pissed off that his cool boss is like, you didn't come to the yoga and donut session. And Kevin's just like, I don't give a fuck about yoga and donuts. So his boss is like, why don't you take the day off and tomorrow we're going to talk about your future. So he's stuck in bumper to bumper. He's stuck in bumper to bumper traffic. I think this is very critical to point out.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, he calls his wife to say like, hey, I'm sorry about this morning. And the key line of, I just miss him so much. And then a truck hits him out of nowhere.
Yeah, like, you see, coming from the far out phrase, talking to his bitch wife, who's like, did you pay the fucking bills? It's like, oh, that's right. Not going that
that's
well.
Right. That's and right. And then she does ask about the bills. He's like, when did you talk to me about the bills? Which he's is like, important.
He's framed. The shot is like the passenger side of the car, and you're looking out the window, and this fucking like 18-wheeler is just like coming into frame, like a big ass dump truck or some shit is just like coming into frame and just smashes the fucking driver's side door. By the way, in bumper to bumper traffic, which we're shown, is like, is there a side street or something? Is he in the middle of an intersection?
That's what it sounds like.
It doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. They just got to move this plot along. So then he blacks out and he's woken up by a beautiful man named Neil. Yeah.
In the movie, it's Buck from Band of Brothers.
Yeah.
This guy's like, there's a like actual, like a couple real actors in the show.
It's Neil McDonough. You've seen him and stuff. He's a damn good actor who's a devout Catholic, and he refuses to do any kissing or sex scenes.
He's one of those guys who's complained about not getting not getting yeah. work because he won't fuck on camera.
Yeah. Yeah. He refuses to do it. And he's a powerhouse in this movie. It's another example.
He's one of the only good things about this movie.
Yeah.
Because he's like kind of fun as who?
The
this
benefactor.
Guy appears. He wakes up. Our main character, whatever the fuck his name is, he wakes up after the crash. And this guy's in his face. They're in a fucking like an alleyway or something. And he's yeah. like, "Are you okay, buddy?" He, like slaps him. Yeah. He's like, "I bandaged. I didn't take you to the hospital, but I bandaged you up.
Yeah.
I'm the benefactor." And he's like, "What the fuck are you talking about?"
So he takes him out into the streets, and the streets are empty. He's like, "Where's my freaking car?" He's like, yeah. "There's no accident here."
By the way, we watched the short film. It's on YouTube. In the short film, he's just straight up like, "I'm the devil." and in the movie, I think basically to make this more appealing to like,
yeah,
to make it more secular, I guess, he's like, "I'm the benefactor," which just doesn't hit.
He says, "I'm the benefactor," but like, "I go by many names," and he's trying to get him to say, like, "Who am I? What is my name?" He wants him to say, like, "I want you to say my name is the devil."
I love the idea of somebody watching that movie and like somebody like shoving their like girlfriend or like sibling or something and being like, "He's the devil. He's definitely going to be the devil."
Or like, someone who, dude, when they reveal it's the devil, they're just like,
"What?"
So it's revealed that he's the devil and that he loves chaos. And what he does is he shifts people in and out of various realities. So he will, let's say that the devil will shift Alec out of this reality and put a different Alec who's like, I don't know.
He can snap his fingers and you move from one dimension to another and you move this fucking moron. He moved this fucking guy from his reality to a reality where I guess nobody's on the street.
It makes not that much sense, but the way they try to explain it is he's like, "You know how your wife was mad at you about paying the bills?" He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "Well, I shifted her from a different reality, and that wife is someone who argued with a version of you that said that they'd pay the bills."
Yeah, your wife's mad at you because she's from a universe where you said you would pay them.
Yes, which is so funny for the devil to be like, "Actually, your wife is a fucking idiot in this reality. You're still good, dude. You're still a good husband. I just gave you a shit wife."
It's like a very baseline, like, science fiction thought, which is like, what, like, there's sort of an explainer that doesn't go anywhere, which is like, what if two people that argue about an event, right, actually witnessed the same thing, but were just in different dimensions? Like, somebody read about, you know, quantum physics, multiverse theory, right? And like applied it here.
Yeah. And I got to give the director credit because the short film came out years before Multiverse Madness took over Hollywood. Like, this guy saw the writing.
Came out
on
in
the wall.
2017.
Which means he had
to probably wrote it 2015 or so. Which, interestingly, like, I mean, I think we're going to talk about like the stuff surrounding the movie more than the movie. So I think this is like fine.
Well, go ahead.
But you know that Brock Heasley. So in the it's very
Brock
funny.
Heasley is the director and writer of the film.
The director and writer of the short film, and then of the feature film. In the short film, he just starts out working in this like bullshit accounting job. Brock Heasley actually did work in a shitty accounting job and was then like fired maybe for just like being a shitty employee. This is a self insert. And it's so funny that when he goes to make like a feature length film, he's like, "Oh, actually that guy was incredibly cool and handsome. And he worked at Bear Stearns." It's just like, you had to make your self insert like a incredibly cool guy.
What I think is
he's just some loser in the short film. It's very funny.
In this conversation with the devil, the benefactor, that is when it is revealed that, yes, Kevin and his wife had a kid who went missing. They turned away from him at a grocery store and he disappeared and they never saw him again. So that's when he starts asking the devil, "Did you shift my fucking son?" So immediately he's like, "All right, this world makes sense to me now. Let me ask you some questions." So the benefactor is like, all you got to do if you want the world is you just got to promise to be one of my shift warriors, which is not really explained. But
they go to a diner to talk it out. The devil's like, I'm going to employ you. And he reveals that in all the other multiverses, there's a bunch of other Kevins, right? Because this guy's name is Kevin. And he's employed for some reason. He loves these guys to be the rulers of the other universes or something. He basically makes like a Faustian bargain with them and is like, I could make you king of your world if you agree to work for me, the not devil, right? Mr. Not Devil.
Yeah, he basically said, like, if you work for the devil, I'll give you everything you want. You just have to be a guy that, like, helped me shift people to different realities. Something.
Yeah, yeah. You also have to shift people because I'm too busy doing something else. I'm watching The Chosen.
And Kevin decides, I'm going to close my eyes, put my head in my hands, and start praying to God, which makes the devil so mad that he disappears for 5 years. So Kevin is stuck in this dark reality for 5 years where praying is outlawed, the Bible is outlawed.
Basically, it's revealed that the planet that he got taken to, or the reality, or the fucking, what do you want to call this, the dimension he got taken to,
yeah,
where after the accident is, I'm going to call it the communist China planet. There's no food, there's no jobs. The cops are just constantly beating the shit out of people for some reason. Religion is outlawed. You're not allowed to pray.
There's an interesting statement in the monologue where it's like they're talking about all the people who are like disappeared from this world, this post-apocalyptic world. And it's like the soldiers, the politicians, anyone deemed problematic. And I'm like, what?
Oh yeah, they use the word problematic. Yeah, there's a little setup bit to this where they're like, this world is run by the people who work for the devil guy,
yeah,
and they shifted out all the politicians and soldiers, which I'm like, sick, wait, what the fuck?
Yeah.
And they're like, anybody deemed problematic, and I'm like, oh, and they don't allow religion, so this is a world with no hope.
For 5 years, Kevin has been secretly writing from memory passages of the Bible and handing them out to
he's been doing blog posts and then giving them to
Sean Astin,
Sam from Lord of the Rings. He's been giving Sam from Lord of the Rings his blog posts, who he distributes somehow. It's not explained.
He takes them to like the slums and hands them out to people and gives them hope.
Because our main character, Kevin, is like a wanted man.
Yeah.
They have a little TV montage where he's called the Kevin who resisted. What was it?
Yeah, the Kevin who refused.
The Kevin who refused, which is like, his name being Kevin is like just incredibly funny time after time in this movie.
The whole world is just like, if you see the Kevin who refused, snitch on him. There's also, there are these theaters called vid theaters, vid watcher. I don't remember what they're fucking called. But basically, you can go and you can watch
the vid angel theaters. You can watch movies without the nudie scenes in it.
Yeah, you can watch alternative reality versions of yourself. So you can see, like, I want to see a version of me that's super rich, and you can just watch that.
They're like a portal to the other dimension, so you can see like an unfucked version of your life, or like watch the, because you're stuck on the shitty communist China planet. And then you can go, there's no movies or any theaters, but you can go and like sit in a chair and for like 5 minutes watch all of the other yous in different dimensions like do something.
Which I mean, I guess it's true. Like
you
waste your time thinking about like an alternate reality, an alternate life, instead of like engaging with the life that you're living in. So yeah, I guess it's half baked, but the concept is there.
It's fine. Like this movie has a problem of like a lot of these kinds of half-baked movies, which is like, we're going to have a dystopian universe, but we can't really think past cops that look like the guys from Half-Life 2.
Yeah.
Like randomly beat the shit out of people, and then everybody's poor and dirty. By the way, this is a fingerless glove planet. For some reason,
everyone's got fingerless gloves.
Yeah, Christian moviegoers, like, they associate, I think, fingerless gloves with, like, homeless people. So everybody has some version of fingerless gloves.
Yeah, someone's wearing a top hat with the top coming off.
yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, close to it, right? Yeah. Like,
he does eat out of a can of beans.
Kevin is addicted to baked beans. He lives in, like, a shitty motel apartment. And then he, like, walks around the streets and there's just, like, it's like the every scene from like Detroit, right, from like the 80s and 90s, with just like a bunch of random people just like trash cans of trash burning, and they're just like hanging out.
It's so funny. And meanwhile, a cop is just like, halt, there is a citizen praying. Very, very fucking stupid.
I don't really want to talk about the plot of the movie, or like,
no, I just want to move it along to some of the dumb shit.
Not Sam Altman, fuck.
Sean
Astin. Sam Altman.
You better leave that in.
Sean Astin is like, in like a bunch of the first, like the first four or five scenes he's in, he's eating in every scene, which is very funny. And like, look, no offense, but like Sam from Lord of the Rings is a little older, little bigger.
He's a paunchy, right,
nowadays.
Man.
So yeah. Him just kind of like fatly eating like a hoagie before he like goes to talk to the Kevin who refused is like pretty funny.
Turns out, spoiler, Sean Astin ends up being an agent of the devil and does have to chase Kevin around. And it is very funny to watch him like run up and down stairs. Eventually, Kevin finds a way to go to his wife. So he gets a hold of Sean Astin since he ends up working for the devil. He's got the technology to shift to different realities. He finds a reality where his wife, where Kevin's wife has never met Kevin. She's a nurse and she has a kid, a young girl. And Kevin basically figures out a way to defy the devil and go to that reality so he can be with his wife. He teleports to this world where he meets her at a hotel bar, the very first hotel bar. And he's still wearing his post-apocalyptic clothing. So he's got like a bloody face. He's got gloves on.
He's got his jean jacket on, but like he's magically like not dirty. I know. When he like shows up in this. This is, by the way, at the very end of the movie, because fuck it. We're not talking about the plot of this movie.
And yeah, I mean, I think we did. to be honest.
Basically. Yeah.
It's a 2-hour movie. Very easy to describe the plot of this film. So she is sitting at a bar. She's got a beer. And she just like doesn't know if she should drink it or not. And then Kevin walks up and he just echoes the first line that she says to him.
It's
like,
it's a classic reverse. Yeah. What we do in reverse.
And he's like, well, isn't this just the saddest fucking piece of shit you've ever seen? Which, guess what? When the genders are reversed, not a good look for Kevin.
Yeah, it doesn't work. He walks up and he's like, look at this fucking sad bitch.
Yeah. And she's just like, what? What did you say? They end up chit-chatting and their natural attraction to each other shines through and they end up getting married. He becomes the stepfather to her daughter. And then one of the final shots is they have another baby boy. So their son who went missing because the devil shifted him, Kevin just gets a new kid. And this,
yep.
As soon as the movie ended, I was reminded why I fucking hate the Book of Job. Because Job had 10 kids that God killed in a petty dispute with the devil. He also had a lot of slaves, so fuck Job.
He has a bunch of servants also just killed, right? Yeah. For God to make his point, right? About whether or not Job's going to love, curse his name or not.
Yeah, and so God, because Job is, you know, simping for God, God gives him back all of his kids. Which, dude, I don't care if... how many kids God gives you. If you had 10 children die all at the same time, that trauma is going to fuck you up for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Job then had, you know, twice as many kids and would often stare off into the sunset and disassociate from everyone in his life. But yeah, you know, it's a very loose adaptation of the Book of Job because Kevin keeps the faith. You know, he's not a very religious person at the beginning of the movie, and it is reciting these Bible stories from memory that keeps him going. Sean Astin is always like, God abandoned you. Why do you care? So he's kind of filling in for the role of Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar from the Book of Job.
He's also figure. He's also just like, he talks like every Christian imagines like an atheist talks.
Yeah.
Which is like, wow, this fucking religion shit's kind of weird, but people sure seem to like it. I wish I don't really get it, but blah, blah, blah. Right. Like,
yeah.
Most faith-based movies fall apart quickly, and watching them is like walking on Legos with your eyes. It's hard to feel God in a faith-based film when they have the production value of a church play.
And that's it. That's the movie. There's not a lot. It could have been like an hour-long episode of Supernatural. And honestly, the camera quality kind of made me feel like I was watching a CW show. It did not feel like it belonged in a theater.
It has that thing where like for a little bit, it looks like a quote-unquote real movie.
Yeah.
Because the shots are fairly clean. There's like a lot of post color correction. It has the image quality of like a real film. Basically somebody in post can put like filters on, but it ends up just falling very, very flat.
Very flat. Yeah.
Which I mean, I guess is kind of to be expected for a movie they spent $6 million to make. Right.
Yeah. It made $12 million at box office. And I don't know how Angel Studios monetizes or qualifies the success of something on their streaming platform. So we'll see how this movie goes down in history for Angel Studios. The two questions I have, and I'll ask one, we'll discuss, and then we'll get to the other one, is this good propaganda? And I think kind of. I mean, it came out, the theatrical release came out in the middle of Multiverse Madness. So it feels timely, even though, you know, this has been in the works for a really long time. So it feels very timely. The message of just like keep the faith of God and your life will eventually get better is, I guess, you know, the Book of Job. We talked about this earlier this week, but the Book of Job is like the most Buddhist of the Christian books, or, you know, the biblical books, because this is Old Testament shit. But it is just the like, yeah, man, God, no matter how much you love God, sometimes you have a good life, sometimes you have a bad life. Just like, don't curse God's name and maybe you'll have a better life, you know?
I mean, one way you can measure whether or not it's good propaganda is like, did people watch it? I mean, the movie did. I think like we can theorize that the movie basically made its money back. Declared like budgets like $6 million. Box office was like a little bit more than 12. You've got your marketing, but then you've also got like your streaming stuff. And apparently somebody's paying for these like Angel products. I told Connor, like, it's one of those review bombed movies on places like Rotten Tomatoes. So basically the critic score is like, this movie sucks. It's like pretty bad. It's in the 30s. And then the audience score is somewhere in the 80s. And I thought what I might find was a bunch of like Indian review bots in the audience section. But a lot of them seemed like pretty genuine. There were like a lot of like genuine 5-star, like, this is a great adaptation of the Book of Job. Wow, this Christian movie looks really good. Like, that didn't seem fake, right? So like, it works for them. I mean, I don't think anybody's being brought to the faith because of the shift, like I said, but I don't think that's a purpose of propaganda. I think it's, if you want Christian media that you can watch, that you can pretend is like on the level of indie film or big box office hits, like, you know, like Marvel keeps putting out, you can watch this, right? And you can show this to other Christians and you can pretend like it's good, which it is not.
This movie, like the Sound of Freedom audience that we saw, packed house, by the way, the Sound of Freedom audience, you know, they, I think they would like this kind of movie. And it's not a comment on the audience other than the fact that, like what you said, is this movie is not going to convert you. This movie is for the people who, when they watch it, they're like, that's right. Like, and that's,
I disagree a little bit. I don't know if they would like this movie. I think it's the same thing when like a hack, like liberal comedian gets like a clap, right? I think they would, those kinds of people, I think generally think these movies are like important to make. They're like happy they got made. Maybe they'll even go see them, but it's not like they're going to think about them for a long time. Right. No. Like they want to be present in the culture. They maybe want to win the culture war, right? They will give their money to support a product like this, but I think even they know that this is like a mediocre product.
That's a good point, because like, I remember arguing with my family members who genuinely liked Sound of Freedom. And I was pointing out, like, I mean, didn't you think this was stupid? Didn't you think this plot hole was dumb? Didn't you think like the fact that his best friend in the movie was a pedophile? You didn't think that was fucking weird?
An ex-pedophile.
And my family was just like, that stuff is hokey, but like, it's more important that the story gets told.
Yeah,
but I think with the shift, I'd be like, it's hokey. I put it on for my kids, whatever.
I think, by the way, I don't think Sound of Freedom is going to have any staying power at all. I don't think anybody's going to be watching that movie. I mean, I think us ironically watching it is more attention than it's gotten basically since like the hype around the movie died down.
It was lightning in a bottle that came out at just the right time. And it happened to do that. Like, every Hollywood studio is like, we are not going to release this because the QAnon conspiracy theory is too hot. We don't want this. And one studio is like, we'll do it. And we'll tell everyone that this is the movie Hollywood refused to let you see.
The narrative was perfect. It was just perfect. Yeah.
And I think Angel Studios is going to try and recapture that.
They'll be able to.
Yeah. May see them try and like plant their own propaganda to generate hype for a movie.
Well, I think they will. Like, let's talk about Angel Studios in like a recap at the end, because I want to talk about.
Okay.
Using popular genres to share faith-based stories is a great way to entertain and inspire a love for God. Look at C.S. Lewis, who used fantasy to share Christian themes and inspire millions and make millions.
Other question I have beyond is this movie good propaganda is, what are good Christian movies? there are good Christian movies, and then there are good movies about Christianity. And I think this is a good Christian movie that is a bad movie about Christianity. The two movies that come to mind that I think are good Christian movies and good movies about Christianity are The Last Temptation of Jesus Christ, directed by Martin Scorsese, and The Passion of the Christ by Mel Gibson, which, dude, Passion of the Christ is awesome. And one of the things that the director of The Shift had in the short film, there's like a plug for funding the movie, and the message that the pitch man they hired for that plug, he basically says, like, when Hollywood makes movies about Christianity, you get stuff like Noah, which had Noah talking to golems, which, by the way, I think Noah is fucking incredible. One of Aronofsky's best. It's so, so good.
It's weird that they don't want to do that, like, biblical literalism. I don't know.
Yeah. But everyone's trying to capture that, like, Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe money or Passion of the Christ money. And I think it's possible to have Hollywood make a good movie inspired by the Bible. They used to have all kinds of biblical epics with Charlton Heston in them.
I think they don't want allegories, though, right? Like, everybody's happy to have Tolkien up there, right? As like one of these people they can bring up and be like, what, did you know that Tolkien was actually very Christian, right? Or like C.S. Lewis, right? Like the C.S. Lewis series did, as I recall, like pretty well at the box office. But those are like, broadly speaking, those are just allegories, right? Yeah. They're like, we want the Bible on screen and we want people to like and celebrate it. So like, presumably, like, good films, right? You what you mean is like successful films, like culturally successful, lauded and like lasting films,
not even just successful, just like objectively strong films, strong scripts, strong performances.
Yeah, both of the directing ones you named. I would insert into this, and I know Warner's hate it because there's a bunch of historical inaccuracies, it's like kind of a weak film, but its cultural staying power has been enormous, and I always bring it up. Kingdom of Heaven, Ridley Scott's 2005 Kingdom of Heaven, is, I think, a good and important, like, Christian film. I actually think it's, for all of its faults, of which there are many, Kingdom of Heaven is bizarrely neutral, right? Yeah. It's portrayal of Saladin and his knights and Islam is it's not like a pro Islamic movie by any means. What am I trying to say? It's like more neutral than you would expect, right? And its portrayal of the tribulations of the Crusades and like the difficult realities of invading a country and just trying to randomly make a kingdom there and trying to support it, and then like the cynical use of Christendom and stuff, I think makes it an actual like interesting film. And then, by the way, right, like Crusader guys just fucking love that movie. It's been almost 20 years, and they still use the iconography for that film all the fucking time.
Right? Yeah.
It comes up in like internet discourse all the time. And that to me is like what means success, right? To be a part of like a culture narrative.
Gotcha.
To create images that just like keep popping back up over and over and over again.
It's talked about in non-ironic, non-derisive ways, like 5 years after its release. Mm-hmm. Like Sound of Freedom will be mocked. Passion of the Christ will be remembered as, you know, pointing out that the Jews killed Jesus Christ.
And like, well,
in the most anti-Semitic scene I've ever seen in a movie, probably.
Oh, that's uncut gems, baby. No, I mean, it's like, and it's like a real historic event. I mean, if you were around for like the Passion, maybe like the Zoomers don't know, but like when the Passion of the Christ came out, it was like a fucking phenomenon.
Yeah, right? It was huge.
And then The Last Temptation of Christ, you know, as my version of not being around for Passion of the Christ is I wasn't around for The Last Temptation of Christ, which came out like, I think, a year before I was born, right? It's like 88.
Yeah.
And that was like a huge cultural event, right? A lot of people protesting it, by the way, did not like the film, didn't want people to see it, right? A lot of, especially a lot of Catholics, I think, up in arms about it.
Which, I mean, Martin Scorsese is a devout Catholic. So yeah. It's just, I mean, Gibson is a pre-Vatican II Catholic, so maybe
a correct Catholic. Yeah. He's a Sedevacantist, right? Yeah. He's like the fucking Pope is the Antichrist, right? Fuck him.
Yeah. So two very different Catholics. One telling a very literal story to get you to feel You know, Passion of the Christ is a very literal story trying to get you to feel the torment that Jesus endured, whereas Last Temptation is like, what if Jesus, on when he was dying on the cross, was tripping balls and he envisioned like a whole other life for himself, mm-hmm. where he's like, Polly.
I mean, what if Jesus was a man, right, and went through the real tribulations, I think, that like men would, given the same situation.
Right.
In any case, right, like, I don't think the shift is going to hit that way. I don't think that anything Angel Studios has produced is going to hit like those movies that we talked about. I do think The Chosen seems to be on that trajectory. And it's so funny that their fallout with The Chosen might be something that, like, dooms Angel Studios, or at least, like, very much constricts what they imagine their future to be. To be honest, they have not found success making their own shit yet. Right. They found success finding these, either getting in early on something that ended up being huge, The Chosen, which are now fucking gonzo. They're kicked out of that shit. Although we'll see, they're appealing basically, I think, to arbitration. Right. Like to try and get back into that, and then, or to try and milk some more money out of it. I don't know which one. And then Sound of Freedom, which I just don't think there's going to be like a follow up to. Right. And critically, they didn't make. Right.
Well, I told you that I want the Angel Studios universe to have a massive crossover movie where the lead guy in Sound of Freedom goes to a universe where he's a pedophile and he has to kill himself.
he has to shoot himself with like the time gun.
And it's just him with a little mustache.
Yeah. Ironically, there's another little bit of Angel Studios news in that they hired the Sound of Freedom director.
Yeah, the director of Sound of Freedom, that guy's name is Alejandro Gomez Monteverde.
Alejandro Monteverde. So the director of Sound of Freedom, Alejandro Monteverde, got signed to like a 10-year deal, basically to try to come up with more Sound of Freedoms for their company. In a weird deal where he also like gets a $4 million house. which is very funny. I don't know, just one of these weird like Hollywood deals. I wonder if it has to be like in Utah. You know what I mean?
I have no idea, but you were explaining to me why he has that house, and it's just like an incubator kind of house kind of thing.
My guess is when you see like this weird shit with corporate contracts is because somebody at Angel Studios has a connection with like, I don't know, like a real estate developer, and they're like, we could get this like at cost, right? Like, we're never going to pay $4 million for this house that we're going to offer to him contractually for net value $4 million or whatever, right?
Right.
Also, in Angel Studio news recently, they might be moving their headquarters to El Salvador. So El Salvador, so you haven't heard of it. Finally, a piece of Angel Studios news that Connor hasn't heard of yet. So if you haven't heard, like, El Salvador a couple years ago elected their like meme crypto president. He was the guy who's like, basically, we're going to take the El Salvadoran peso and we're going to link it to Bitcoin because their currency is shit, which didn't work out, it turns out. And he's like, we're going to give free power to like crypto companies so they come here and like mine Bitcoin or some shit. Right. It was in the news for a bit. But one of the things that his government did, their Congress did, was they changed... They passed a bunch of tax reductions. And one of the tax reductions that they passed was they zeroed out taxes on incoming investment capital, basically to attract foreign capital investment. And I think this is basically why Angel Studios has moved, right? It's not because there's no income tax. It's not because, they get to own slaves like they would in fucking Dubai, you know, or something like this. It's because investment capital is like zeroed out there. So tax haven behavior, very,
That's very interesting because can we talk about your predictions for the future of Angel Studios?
Yeah. So, do we want to talk about predictions for the future? Or do we want to talk about Epoch Times?
I mean, I think they're the same thing, aren't they?
I think that Angel Studios is going to have trouble in the future, right? Like their big cash cow, The Chosen, is splitting with them. Their new weird Catholic movie Cabrini did not do well. They spent 50, I think it was the biggest budget Angel Studios production to date. They spent 50 million bucks making it And then I think it made like 19. So like they did not make their money back on that one. Odd, by the way, right? Like you see this kind of smattering of stuff, right? Sound of Freedom they didn't make, but they did distribute it. That's basically a QAnon movie. It's not really a Christian movie, right? There's like some Christian themes, but what? It's not a Christian movie. The Shift is very much like kind of non-denominational, right? Like kind of evangelical in some ways, but certainly not tied to any denomination. Cabrini is straight up a Catholic movie. It's about a Catholic saint, right?
Yeah.
I don't have to tell you that evangelicals broadly in the United States don't care for Catholics. They don't care for the concept of saints. They think it's all pretty fucked up and shitty, right? Like, I don't know if it's worse that Cabrini is a woman, but that might make it worse. But in any case, right, like, Angel has no particular predilection to any particular ideology or any particular sect, right? And basically, like, a string of these kinds of, like, media failures, right, doesn't really bode well for them. They were skimming money off of The Chosen for, you know, now basically half a decade, and that, right, that revenue is going to be gone. And the last couple of movies, they've been spending that Sound of Freedom money, like, pretty quickly, blowing through it.
Yeah.
But it does, and I don't want to impugn anybody. Connor, you were kind of journalist adjacent for a while, at least, right?
Yeah.
If not a full-on journo. Mm-hmm. I don't want to impugn anybody or make any kind of assertions that I could be sued for. But I will bring up that one of the things in recent news is the indictment of the financial head of the Epoch Times.
While the mainstream media has been normalizing both socialism and communism, the Epoch Times has been reporting on the subversion of both America and the world by these two deadly ideologies.
Which is a media company that has some interesting parallels to Angel Studios, right? Epoch Times, Weidong Bill Guan. Weidong, quote-unquote, Bill Guan. He's under indictment for laundering something on the order of $60, $70 million.
Jesus Christ.
Through a media company, the Epoch Times. The Epoch Times, nominally, is a newspaper. They produce a newspaper, which you can buy. That's kind of shifted, by the way, in the Trump admin. You probably, if you're on Twitter ever during like the Trump administration and beyond, you have definitely seen ads for the Epoch Times. They're generally kind of a right-wing leaning newspaper that shifted hard to support Donald Trump during the Trump admin and apparently got a lot of subscribers from it. This indictment actually brings some of that into question, right? Because the structure of the Epoch Times, this is a company that like exploded out of nowhere, basically, right? All of a sudden, the Epoch Times was making enormous ad buys all over the internet. They were expanding their production and distribution, not just because of the Trump wave, but alleged in the indictment, because a lot of those subscriptions were fake. Bill Guan and the Epoch Times, according to the indictment, were in charge of a money laundering scheme where they were on the dark web buying up people's stolen identities, filing for unemployment and COVID relief funding from the government, and then laundering that money through basically a donation and subscription model to their media service to profit the Epoch Times. Right? There's a lot to say about the Epoch Times. They're connected. Yeah, go ahead.
I can't believe that a funnel organization for CIA funding would do such a thing.
Yeah, there's a lot to say about the Epoch Times that we can't say here, right? Like, or that it would take too long to go into. TruAnon has some great episodes on the Falun Gong and like these like you know, weird pseudo Christian converts that the CIA has some weird connections to.
Yeah,
but basically, what you need to know is the Epoch Times is largely a scam, right? As it we'll see in court. That's the kind of statement I should not make, right?
Allegedly.
But allegedly, according to an indictment, the Epoch Times is a scam company first and a media company second, right? Mm-hmm. According to the indictment, if one would logically deduce that it's a media company for the purposes of money laundering. The donation model, the explosion out of kind of seemingly nowhere, right? The connection between a seemingly very successful media company and a product that doesn't seem very good, right? Because the Epoch Times is not good journalism by any means. A troubled past and a history of lawsuits. Oddly similar in a lot of ways to Angel Studios, I'll at least say. There's one last bit which is kind of weird, which is the Angel Studios' latest offering is a kind of an anti-Chinese propaganda, basically like the kind of stuff that you've seen that if you like follow any of that stuff, you've probably seen before, right? Like Chinese immigrant oppressed in China because communism comes to the United States and converts to Christianity, by the way, and becomes a wildly successful doctor and now preaches the gospel, something, something, right? This is their latest offering. Feels very similar to Falun Gong style stuff about the United States and whether or not they're Christian, which is a question. Some of them certainly tell you they are.
And you're referring to the movie Sight about the Chinese eye surgeon. Now, I want to say...
In theaters now.
Yes. I want to say, and the plot description for Cabrini, the very last line says, despite her lung condition, Cabrini endures to the age of 67 and becomes hugely celebrated. Later, she is canonized, making her the first American saint, the patron saint of immigrants, with her order spread all over the world, including China. So, yeah, Angel Studios does seem to have a vendetta against China.
I'm just going to say, I mean, the Falun Gong does it for obvious domestic reasons, but their connections to the CIA certainly don't hurt. Interesting. I don't know. Interesting that Christian propaganda and feel-good stories often align with American foreign policy interests. I'll say that at the very least.
Yes. Yeah.
When you invest in The Shift, you're not just investing in a groundbreaking Christian film. You have the potential to share in the profits. Now, we don't have one of these profits to promise that you'll make this profit. But I am going to repeat that The Chosen earned $70 million in revenue.
You have anything else to say about The Shift and Angel Studios?
I don't. I'm keeping an eye on Angel Studios because they do have three other movies coming out this year. One is called Sound of Hope, the story of Possum Trot. I have no fucking clue what that is.
I will not be saying that.
Bonhoeffer, which is about a German theologian and anti-Nazi dissident, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. And then Homestead, which is a post-apocalyptic drama film, which I will absolutely...
I think we should go see that. I love post-apocalypse as a genre. I'm tickled by what Christians think are like interesting and important parts of like post-apocalypse world, and like I think a lot of them secretly desire that because they think it will be like a return of the importance of religiosity is kind of inbuilt to like apocalypse.
Absolutely. I love Christian post-apocalyptic shit. So if you like science fiction, you should read Left Behind.
yeah, definitely. Go buy your go buy your 60 cent used copy of Jerry Jenkins's Left Behind series.
But no, all I really have to say, look, some friends of ours have a podcast called Honey, I Shrunk the Binge, which Alec and I were recently just on, talking about the one and only actual propaganda television show that the United States government has funded, at least openly funded.
Openly.
Yeah.
Recently and openly.
Yeah. But yeah, it's we reviewed The Inspectors, and that'll be releasing at the end of June, last week of June. So
dog shit, by the way.
Dog
absolute
shit.
Absolute dog.
Fun time. The episode that we recorded.
The episode is extremely fun. Please go listen to it. We had so much fun. I think you'll get a laugh out of it.
Yeah.
The show, terrible.
And other than that, now I don't really have anything else. It feels good to record again. I'll say.
Oh
that.
Yeah. Sorry we've been gone for so long. Maybe you haven't noticed. But.
All right, everybody. Thank you very much. And we'll catch you next time.
Peace.
All right.
But legally, you have the right to skip and mute, and VidAngel lets you skip and mute with greater precision. They might say skipping nude scenes in Schindler's List alters the director's vision and makes the artistic experience worse. Some people would never watch Schindler's List with the nude scenes.